18. On the flight home, Buck called Laszlo Miklos. I imagine you want to talk to the young man whose life you saved, eh, Cameron?
I do, Laszlo. And I'm sorry to hear all my other messages to you about what happened that night had to come electronically and not even by phone. I wish I could have given you your wife's message in person. But I understand, my friend, Laszlo said, his voice quavery. I remember every detail of it. I wish only that I could have gone to heaven with her.
I can't imagine how hard it is, Buck said. But the church needs you there. And, oh, Cameron, I am useless. I am not free to help in any real ways anymore. Sometimes I wish they would just find me so I could testify for God before they kill me.
Buck wanted to counter him, but what could he say? We sure appreciate your help in getting those kids out of the country.
I'll do what I can. I look forward to getting them connected with your pilot, but it's unlikely I can risk coming out of the shadows to meet him. I will get them as close to the airport as I dare. Here, let me have you talk to the boy.
Hello, sir, Marcel said, and Buck remembered the voice from their only encounter. I'm so glad to talk to you again, son. I didn't expect I ever would.
I can't thank you enough, Mr. Williams. I know you got in trouble for that. Will I meet you in Chicago?
You sure will.
Mr. Miklos has told me so much about you and your family and friends. I hope I will be safe there.
Safer than where you are, I guess. And the girl?
Georgiana, Stavros, Marcel said. I was so surprised when I heard she had the same story as mine. We finally were introduced at a co-op center.
And have you been able to communicate with her?
It's all set. We will meet with her on the road. Mr. Miklos will stay with us for as far as he can.
That's quite a journey on foot.
He has arranged for someone to drive us, at least until we are a couple of miles from the airport. Then the pilot, Mr. Sebastian, is it?
Yes.
Will come find us and walk us in as prisoners.
We'll be praying for you all. Chang listened to several minutes' worth of small talk, then a pitiful effort by Viv Ivins to again reconnect with Nikolai and get his forgiveness. Finally, Nikolai summoned Akbar.
Suhail, he said, I am not going to replace Mr. Moon as Supreme Commander.
I see.
The job and title are redundant.
Whatever you say, Excellency.
I will count on you more and more, and you may inherit duties that might otherwise have been carried out by a Supreme Commander.
As you wish.
First assignment. Take action on our security leak.
Sir, we are already conducting a full investigation at the palace, but as you know, we turned up nothing on the plane.
How does that make sense? You told me it was as if someone were relaying our very conversations to someone with access to the central database.
That's what it seemed.
We are scouring headquarters for weaknesses in our firewalls, but the late Mr. Hasid put the system in place, and there was not a better person in the world for that job.
His replacement, the South American.
Mexican, sir, Figueroa.
You have confidence in him.
A stellar record. Not the technician Hasid was, but capable. He is overseeing the testing, and he himself will also be tested, of course.
I want to send a message to whoever is subverting us from inside. Get them to panic, put them on the defensive.
I'm open to any suggestion, Potentate.
Charge the Indians.
Sir?
The stewards, convict them of treason.
On what evidence?
They are the only logical ones, Suhail. The pilot was not even on board during most of our meetings. They were.
But they tested clean.
Who knows that but you and I?
Mm-hmm.
No one. Am I correct?
You are.
Whisper it to Leon and to Viv, then release it to the media. They should disembark in New Babylon in handcuffs. Do you have two pair on board?
I do, but...
A problem?
I'm at your service, sir, but I'm missing something. The mole will see we fingered the wrong perpetrators. Rather than put him or her on the defensive, it may make us look like soft opponents.
So much the better. Let him grow overconfident. Still, he will see what we do with people we believe are insurrectionists. If convicted, the penalty is death. Oh, Suhail, if they get off this plane in shackles, consider them convicted. The execution should follow within 48 hours.
Done.
And your conscience, Director?
My conscience?
Knowing the truth, does this give you pause?
No, sir. You are the father of truth. My conscience is at your service.
There was a long pause.
They do good work, though, do they not? Carpathia said at last. The stewards.
Quite.
No need to inform them or cuff them until we touch down. But do get the information trail started. And then we need to discuss the final solution for the Israeli dissidents and the Judites. Let me know as soon as you have casualty statistics on Operation Petra.
Laszlos wished he could go with the two young people all the way to the safe house in America. What an adventure! But how could he justify abandoning his brothers and sisters in Greece? The net was tightening, and few of them would survive until the glorious appearing. But no one would question giving the teenagers a better chance. Being involved in getting them connected with this pilot made Laszlos feel alive again. He dreaded the end of the caper when his friend Kay would drive him back to Ptolemais. He would then walk the last mile and a half to his secret place and settle into his awful routine. The plan was for Kay to pick up the boy and him in the country at the north edge of town. They would stay on the outskirts, getting Marcel close enough to the co-op to where he could walk there and get his meager bag of belongings. Georgiana Stavros would wait for them on the southern end of town, off the road that led to the airport. Cameron Williams and Marcel had told him she was a tall brunette, fair-skinned for a Greek, and pretty. Laszlos liked to imagine that she looked like his wife when first he met her, more than 40 years before. Chang noticed that Carpathia's plane sounded as if it was descending when Suhail Akbar returned to talk with the potentate.
Ah, Director, Nikolai began. We are planning something very special for Petra when Ben-Judah is confirmed present, no?
Sir, we need to talk.
Answer my question, Suhail.
Yes, of course, but I have bad news.
I do not want bad news. Everybody was healthy. We had plenty of equipment for the Petra offensive. You were going to ignore the city, waiting to destroy it when both Micah and Ben-Judah were both there, and overtake those not yet inside. What could be bad news? What do we hear from them?
Nothing.
Our nonsense. They were to report as soon as they had overtaken the insurgents. The world was to marvel at our complete success without firing a shot. No casualties for us versus total destruction of those who oppose me. What happened?
We're not sure yet.
You must have had 200 commanding officers alone.
More than that.
And not a word from one of them?
Our stratospheric photoplanes show our forces advancing to within feet of overrunning approximately 500,000 outside Petra.
A cloud of dust and the enemy, in essence, plowed under.
That was the plan, Excellency.
And what? The old men in robes and long beards fought back with hidden daggers?
Our planes waited until the dust cloud settled and now find no evidence of our troops.
Carpathia laughed.
I wish I were teasing you, Potentate. High-altitude photographs 10 minutes after the offensive show the same crowd outside Petra, and yet...
None of our troops. Yes, you said that. And our armaments? One of the largest conglomerations of firepower ever assembled, you told me, split into 3 divisions. Invincible, you said?
Disappeared.
Can those photographs be transmitted here?
They're waiting in your office, sir. But people I trust verify what we're going to see. Or not see, I should say.
Carpathia's voice sounded constricted, as if he'd rather explode than speak.
I want the potentate of each of the world regions on his way to New Babylon within the hour. Any who are not en route 60 minutes from now will be replaced. See to that immediately, and when you determine when the one from the farthest distance will arrive, set a meeting for the senior cabinet and me with the 10 of them for an hour later. And these Jews, he said slowly, we expect them all to be in Petra as soon as they can be transported there.
Actually, they will not all fit. We expect Petra itself to be full and the rest to camp nearby.
What is required to level Petra and the surrounding area?
2 planes, 2 crews, 2 annihilation devices? We could launch a subsequent missile to ensure thorough devastation, though that might be overkill.
Ah, Suhail, you will one day come to realize that there is no such thing as overkill. Let the Jews and the Judahites think they have had their little victory, and keep the failed operation quiet. We never launched it. Our missing troops and vehicles and armaments never existed.
And what of the questions from the families?
The questions should go to the families. We demand to know where these soldiers are and what they have done with our equipment.
Tens of thousands, AWOL? That's what we will contend?
No, Suhail. Rather, why do not you go on international television and tell the GCNN audience that the greatest military effort ever carried out was met by 500,000 unarmed Jews who made it disappear? Perhaps you could use a flip chart. Now you see us, now you do not.
I'm scared, Marcel told Laszlos as they stole out of the hideaway at nightfall.
There is no need to be, son. You are just excited. You have endured tragedy, as we all have. But you are being given a second chance. If you are not safe with the Tribulation Force, you will never be.
They walked a mile and a half in the dark on dirt paths Laszlos had come to know well. Though he walked more than he rode and never drove anymore, he still felt the pain and weariness of his age. Marcel seemed to have to wait for him, and Laszlos wished he could tell him to go on. But he wanted to feel useful. He was part of the escapade, part of the plan. These precious young people would be in his charge until he sent them off with Godspeed to rendezvous with George Sebastian. 1/2 mile outside Ptolemais, Laszlos spotted Kay's tiny white car well off a rarely used road. Laszlos stopped Marcel with a touch, then made a bird call. Kay tapped the brake, and the taillights went on briefly.
That means no one is around, Laszlos said. Run to the car. I will be there.
He knew Marcel wanted to stretch those lanky legs, and as Laszlos shuffled along as quickly as he could, he enjoyed watching the boy lope to the car. Kay had long since removed the inside light, so when the door opened, the car still looked dark. When Laszlos arrived, Kay was behind the wheel, Marcel next to him. Laszlos squeezed into the minuscule back seat directly behind Marcel. Kay, older than Laszlos, bald and bony, wore a small black stocking cap and spoke with difficulty because most of his front teeth were missing.
He is risen,
and the boy and Laszlos, though wheezing, said, Christ is risen indeed. Kay drove carefully to the edge of the city and parked on a dark street.
You know where you are? Laszlos asked the boy.
I think so, Marcel said. The co-op is in the cellar under the pub a block and a half that way.
And you know the password?
Of course, they have my stuff.
And they will confirm that the girl...
Georgiana.
Yes, he's waiting.
Marcel nodded and jumped out of the car. Laszlos quickly cranked down his window.
Psst, do not run, he whispered.
And the boy slowed. Kay turned and grinned at him.
Young people, he said.
How long till our luck runs out, Kay?
Kay shook his head and his smile faded.
We are already living on next month's time, Laszlos. What happens if you ever get stopped? That's the end of it, Kay said. They'll take me to get the mark, but I'll tell them to just kill me, because I'm through fighting.
Laszlos clapped his friend on the shoulder. But you're doing damage until the time comes, eh?
Much as I can.
Marcel returned a canvas bag over his shoulder.
Any problem? Laszlos said.
He shook his head, tossing the bag in the back, leaving just enough room for the girl.
She's supposed to be there, and nobody followed me. Look for one small stone on top of 2 8 kilometers from the airport. She'll be in the underbrush near there. Just pull over and she'll find us.
Kay stayed outside the city and headed toward the airport road. They saw no GC peacekeepers or vehicles, but still Laszlos found his right leg bouncing, his hands clasped tightly in his lap. When they passed the 10K sign, Laszlos leaned forward and helped Kay watch the odometer. A few minutes later, Marcel said,
"There!"
Kay's headlight showed 2 small stones on the left side of the road with another laid casually atop them. No one would have noticed if they hadn't been looking for them. Kay checked his mirrors and Laszlos shifted so he could look out the back too.
"Nobody," he said.
Kay pulled off to the side, his right front tire crunching the 3 stones. He sat with the engine idling and the lights on, squinting into the rearview mirror.
"Let's go, young lady," Laszlos muttered. "We don't want to be seen."
"Want me to call for her?" Marcel said.
"She was supposed to find us, right?"
"Right."
"Always stick to the plan. If the plan changes, you don't improvise, you leave."
Kay nodded.
10 seconds, he said. "I won't stay here longer."
"There she is," Marcel said.
Georgiana ran up to the car, and Laszlos leaned across Marcel's bag to open her door. She was shivering in jeans and a white short-sleeve shirt and a ratty red baseball cap hooding her eyes. She carried a small, dark green satchel barely a foot long.
"Marcel," she said, "good to see you again."
"Yeah, hi. Let's go."
She jumped in and put her bag between her feet.
"You must be Laszlos," she said. "I'm Georgiana."
She squeezed his arm. Her dark fingers were cold. She put her hands on Kay's shoulders.
"And this must be Kay."
Marcel raised a hand and she gripped it.
"This is exciting," she said,
then rubbed her palms together.
"He is risen," Kay said.
"Amen," she said, nearly squealing. "He is risen indeed."
"Is that all you brought?" Laszlos said.
"It's all I have, sir," she said, smiling, "and all I need."
"Venturing out into the new world with hardly a thing to your name."
"God is able," she said. "Marcel tells me you have a gun."
"Marcel has the mouth of a young man," Laszlos said. "You must both learn to say little and listen much."
"I'm sorry," she said. "Am I talking too much? Just excited, that's all. I haven't felt this way since the day Mr. Williams let me go."
Marcel nodded.
"So I can't see your gun, Mr. Laszlos?"
"Miklos, I do not bring my gun out of my home. I'm not looking to hurt anyone. It is for my safety, that's all."
"But Kay has a gun," she said, squeezing his shoulders again. "Don't you, young man?"
Kay smiled shyly and shook his head as he pulled the car back onto the road.
"You watch too much television," Laszlos said. "American TV, am I right?"
"Not for a long time. When I do see it, it's all Carpathia, Carpathia, Carpathia."
Laszlos's leg was still bouncing, his hands still pressed together.
"You're both clear on the plan, then," he said.
"If Marcelli's I am," Georgiana said, "he's the one who told me. We're meeting this George guy off the road up from the airport. He'll take us in like we're his prisoners, and the computer will show that's what he's there for."
"Yes, and you must avoid eye contact. Look sullen, and just go directly to the plane with him. Maybe you could let Marcel wear your hat low enough to cover his eyes, and you could let your hair hang in your face."
She was still rubbing her hands together.
"This thing wouldn't fit him. Anyway, we'll recognize the pilot how again?"
"He should be the only man on the road looking for you," Laszlos said.
"But he's a big man, right? An American?"
"Way over 6 feet tall and almost 250 pounds, Marcel said. "Light hair, blue eyes, and you'll know him," Laszlos said. "We should pray."
"Yes," Georgiana said. "Please."
"Why don't you pray?" Laszlos said.
"I'm too nervous," she said.
All right, Laszlo said. Lord, we thank you for these young people, and ask you to go before them and protect them.
There he is, Georgiana said. Is that him?
A big young man strode purposefully up the right side of the road. He wore big boots, khaki pants, and a light zippered jacket. His hair looked almost white, his face dark. Laszlo couldn't make out the eye color, but the man stopped and looked directly into the car as Kay slowed and passed, pulling over 50 yards beyond him. Marcel reached for his door handle, and Georgiana reached for her bag.
Wait, Laszlo said. He's early.
He rolled down his window and leaned to stick his head out, aware that Georgiana was digging in her bag and ready to go.
Mr. Miklos, the man called out, but Laszlo thought he detected a European accent.
Hey, Mr. Sebastian, Marcel shouted, before Laszlo could shush him.
Now jogging and having cut the distance between him and the car, the man hollered, Marcel? Georgiana?
Keep rolling, Kay, Laszlo said. This isn't right.
Why? Georgiana said. What's wrong?
If that's Sebastian, Laszlo said, as Kay slowly pulled back onto the road, he'll find us.
No, Georgiana whined. Stop!
We'll not make this transfer in the middle of the road, Laszlo said.
Kay, pull over,
Georgiana said with sudden authority. She pulled a huge handgun with a silencer from her bag and pressed it against Laszlo's temple.
I'll kill him if you don't stop.
Don't stop, Kay, Laszlo cried. Marcel is for real, I know him.
Kay stopped accelerating but coasted.
Stop now, she said. I mean it.
Marcel whipped around, kneeling on the seat to face her. He yanked her cap off, and as the silencer pulled away from Laszlo's head, he turned to see Georgiana's forehead and the mark of the beast. The whistling, abbreviated punch of the shot filled the car with the acrid smell of gunpowder, and Marcel was driven back with such force that he folded under the dashboard. The windshield was covered with gore, and Laszlo grimaced at the gaping hole in the back of the boy's head.
Stop now, Kay, she wailed, pointing the gun at the back of his head.
The older man wrenched the wheel back and forth, pushing the accelerator to the floor. The little car rocked violently, and Laszlo felt himself bang into his door handle before his bulk went flying back over Marcel's bag toward the girl. She fired through Kay's neck, and he went limp, the car losing speed and angling toward the gravel. Laszlo wrapped his massive arms around the girl and pressed the bottoms of his feet against the door on his side, trying to smash her against her own door. He could only hope the gun was buried somewhere in the crush, but the sounds of more than one set of running footsteps told him that unless he wrestled it away from her, he would soon join his wife in heaven. The car thudded to a stop, and they both rolled forward into the back of Kay's seat. Two other men had joined the Sebastian imposter and all carried weapons. One jerked the girl's door open and dragged her out with one hand. Laszlo tried to hang on, but he had no leverage. He lay on Marcel's bag across the back seat, his arms leaden, gasping.
You all right, Elena? One of the men said.
Laszlo saw her nod with disgust.
He's the only one left, she said, pressing the gun to his forehead.
He turned his hands over, opening his palms toward heaven, and closed his eyes.
We're short-staffed tonight, sir. Hard copy is quicker than the computer, if you don't mind.
I hear you, George said. But I told you old man Albaz had me on recon runs over rebel territory in the Negev, and we were all required to leave our IDs at the field HQ. It's all in the computer. The airport GC clerk swore.
They never think about what those decisions mean to us little guys.
They never think at all, George said. Sorry.
What are you gonna do?
The clerk said, sighing as he tapped his fingers atop the monitor, waiting for the info.
Hey, what about all the guys going AWOL in Jordan?
Don't think I wasn't tempted, George said. Strangest deal I've ever seen.
You get the boils?
Who didn't?
Here it is. You're good. You got a number for me, 6 digits?
040301.
That's it? And where are your prisoners?
Being held up the road.
Need a vehicle?
That would be great.
You're coming right back?
Right back. I'll secure them in the plane and bring the wheels directly to you.
The clerk tossed him a set of keys and pointed to a jeep. George decided he could get used to Trib Force work if it was all this easy. Couldn't be. He sped a mile and a half up the road and pulled over. What was that in the distance? The girl? Alone? He turned on his brights. She was running toward him, screaming. He stepped out. Georgiana? George? Yes. We were ambushed. As she got closer, he saw she was covered in blood. He reached for her. What happened? Where are the other... But as the girl slumped against him, wrapping her arms around his waist, she called out, "Unarmed!" Two men, one about his size, rushed from the bushes with weapons trained on him. Another pulled a jeep into view, doors standing open. The big man jumped into the car George had borrowed at the airport. The other kept a weapon on him as the girl handcuffed and blindfolded him. He was tempted to drive his bulk into her, make her pay for whatever she was involved in. But he wanted to conserve his strength for any real chance to escape. They pushed him into the jeep, and as it took off, he heard the other vehicle behind. "We're going to have fun with you, Yank," the driver said. "By the time we're through, we'll know everything you know." Fat chance, George thought, and wanted to say... But he had already blundered enough, leaving his plane and his weapons unprotected and venturing unarmed into enemy territory, trusting a risky plan devised by well-intentioned brothers, but civilians after all. Maybe the proverbial horse had already escaped the open barn, but too late or not, his training kicked in. Not only would he not say fat chance, but he would also not say anything. The only way these people would know he was capable of uttering a word was if they remembered he had spoken to the girl. Unless he somehow escaped, his next word would be spoken in heaven. He bounced and lost his balance as the jeep accelerated, and he kept bouncing off the door, then almost into the lap of the captor to his left. The man kept pushing George back upright. He could have planted his feet more firmly and kept from jostling so much, but he didn't mind being a 240-pound irritant to the enemy.
"So, George Sebastian of San Diego," the driver said, "and a newly recruited Judahite. A little information will buy you some dinner, and a lot will have you on your way back to the wife and little one before you know it. Hungry?"
George did not respond, not even with a nod or shake of the head.
"Lonely, then, perhaps?"
The man next to George, less fluent in English, said,
"Do you know who is really Elbaz? Because we think we do."
"We do," the girl said. George let the next curve throw him into the man, who pushed him back.
"Sit up, you big stupid person."
This ends Disc 7.